Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
On the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a packer for geeks in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Gad, what are the Long Box guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody! Welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Tommy, you look like Fred Flintstone on a bender. What's up with that weird beard?
It's just me not shaving for the weekend.
For the weekend? Okay. Now, Mikey, you can grow that in like 4 hours, right?
Yes, I have Yabba Dabba face hair.
Yabba Dabba face hair. Tommy, what are you drinking over there, by the way?
I am drinking some Compass Box Spice Tree.
You just picked like four words and put those together. None of that's,
that was
that's
the,
not real.
The Solace of Quantum Bush Baby.
Yeah.
I don't even know what liquor that is.
Yeah. It's scotch.
Yeah. I'm drinking some Jack Banana Frap toothpaste over here.
Yeah. But sure, I just had some Sadness Knives Out Dourness. Delicious.
Delicious.
Spice Tree is a fantastic blended scotch made by Compass Box.
Spice Tree actually is a tremendous mixer. I use Spice Tree mixers all the time. They make a terrific tonic water and a terrific ginger beer. But I didn't know is it a different Spice Tree?
That's just the name of this blend by Compass Box. It's a very complex flavor. It's delicious. It's one of my favorite scotches.
All right. Mikey.
And since we're doing tonight's topic, I figured I'd bring out the good scotch.
Bringing out the good scotch because tonight's topic is gravitas.
Yes.
Mikey, what are you drinking that brings the gravitas?
I decided to go the opposite direction of LT, and I'm drinking a Heineken. Heineken. When you don't want any fucking gravitas, Heineken.
No, because you're a man of the people.
That's right.
That's right.
Don't know which people, but still a man of the people.
Sure. Some people. Those people. Josh. How you doing? What are you drinking?
I am cracking open a Telltale Pale Ale from Mass Landing.
Uh-huh.
It's a double dry hopped IPA-ish pale ale. It's a lightish beer for me, but it's delicious.
Well, it sounds terrific. It sounds good. Speaking of good, let's talk about good trouble. Let's talk about our good friend John Lewis, who passed away this very week. The second big name in civil rights that passed away. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of the other fellow who passed away.
Reverend Cordy Tyndale.
Thank you very much, Josh. Always picking up my slack for me. And they both were lions of the civil rights movement. Died on the same exact day. So we're really mourning a double loss. Now, we all have a great story about John Lewis. Maybe a couple of us have slightly different versions of it. I cried so hard during mine that I don't really remember meeting him all that much. And my funniest bit about John Lewis is I had to rebuy March number 1 four times now and get it signed. And you guys have helped me do that just because I've given away to mentees and friends who I thought could benefit from having a signed copy of John Lewis's life story.
I even gave you two copies, one signed, one not signed, so you could keep the signed copy and give the other one away, you bastard.
I did, and to my internal damnation, I faked the signature in the second one just to make it seem cooler when I gave it away. Mikey, why don't you tell us a little bit about March itself, and then we'll move on from there when it comes to the consciousness of Congress, John Lewis.
Okay. So March is the three-part autobiography of Congressman John Lewis, and it covers his life essentially from childhood, where he grew up as a sharecropper in Alabama, living during the time of Jim Crow laws, where he wasn't given a right to go to any college of his choice. He wanted to go to Troy State, but Troy State had not been desegregated yet. So he writes to Martin Luther King because he heard them on the radio. And Martin Luther King buys him a bus ticket to come out and visit him in Memphis and calls him the boy from Troy and says, if you really want to do this, we'll do this. While he is waiting to fight with the ACLU to get him into Troy State to desegregate it, he goes up to college in Nashville to a seminary school up there. And that's where he gets involved in his first line of civil disobedience. He is introduced to Dr. James Lawson, who is a philosopher and student of nonviolence that he learned from studying the principles of Gandhi. And he teaches it to John Lewis and a bunch of other college students up in that area. And that is essentially the beginning of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent College Coalition.
SNCC comes first, and then we move over to SNCC when we go for a more nonviolent bent.
Okay. So one of the first things they do is start protesting at lunch counters in Nashville. And they, you know, I think we could just – I'm going too deep into the books, I think. I think I just need to recap them. To skip forward, it goes all the way up until the passage of the Voters' Rights Act. It also has a current timeline where John Lewis is going to President Obama's inauguration, but the majority of the history of John Lewis is covered to that point in the 1960s. It covers all the major events of John Lewis's life, which I'm sure we'll end up talking about more in depth as we go along. It was supposed to be followed up by a three-part series covering John Lewis's work in Congress called Run. I had the pleasure of meeting the artist at Dragon Con a few years ago, and they had a sample copy, which was the first like 20 pages, but Run has never actually been released. So I don't know if it ever will. I don't know if they actually finished the project or not. But if you've listened to this podcast at all of us agree that March is one of the best comic books out there, especially when you talk about if you want to talk to somebody and get them interested in civil rights and understanding the nonviolent protests that went on during the civil rights movement, March is the way to go.
And it also is slice of life because it really does go into his life and everyday life. And it also, you know, it's civil rights, it's a history, and it's also just a great comic. The art is great, the writing is fantastic, like everything about it is great.
I totally agree with you there, LT. The like the slice of life you were talking about, just seeing John Lewis growing up on the farm, naming his chickens, talking to his father, and the way he got into college, meeting Martin Luther King the first time, it just brings this, I mean, legendary figure. John Lewis is a legendary figure in my mind, down to earth, and nothing can make him more down to earth than when we met him. We were all lucky enough to meet him down at Comic-Con, down at Dragon Con. Down in Atlanta, which was so good. Does anyone want to talk about that a little bit? LT, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he talked about March at length and then, you know, told us personal stories about those times in his civil rights activism and about how one of the people that, you know, beat him up came to see him in his congressional office and brought his kids and apologized and such. And was able to share that story of this guy's personal growth with everyone. And I think we've shared that story on the podcast before, so I don't think I really need to go into it in tremendous detail here.
Suffice it to say, we all almost died of dehydration when you told that story. But Mikey, yeah, you and I were lucky enough to meet him in the hallway before and have a little personal chat with him one-on-one.
Right, and it was unfortunate because it was the first year that March had come out, and there were a lot of people who were trying to get in, and they didn't have it in a giant room. The room only held about 100 people, and there were easily 200 people waiting in the hallway just to go into that. And so as he came down the hallway, everybody was just saying hi. We managed to stop him, say, hey, could we get a photo with you? And he signed our books then, which prevented us from having to wait in line later on. But very, very generous man with his time. One of the things I think is important about John Lewis, other than the three comic books, because we talk about comic book history and everything, there's a few things that I'd like to keep in mind. Not only are these comic books important, but he felt our culture, the geek culture, was also very important. And one of the reasons that he wanted to go to Dragon Con and use a comic book is because he thought it was very important that the message get out, because he felt that although he had done a lot of work in the civil rights movement, that there was always more work to be done. And he thought it would be a good way to reach young people, which is why when he was given the opportunity, he said, I will do this, but only if we make it a comic book.
Right. And let's not go over too much. Let's not forget his cohort here. This was an aide to him, correct?
One of his aides. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Nate Powell?
No, Nate Powell was the Nate Powell was the artist.
I'm sorry.
Mark something was the writer, I think.
And he was John Lewis's aide, and he first pitched the idea of maybe we do this in a comic book form. And to his extreme credit, you know, a lot of people don't listen to your aides. Thank you, LT. Especially when they're pitching you like a football pass of a crazy idea like this. But John Lewis had the vision to say, hey, that is a great way to get two kids. And that's, you know, why he listened to his aide at the time and this went forward. So I give him a lot of credit for, you know, just not poo-pooing an idea like this and actually running with it as he did.
And one of the things that they is in actually March, he makes mention of a popular comic called the Martin Luther King and the Montgomery Story, which explains the basics of passive resistance and nonviolent action as tools for desegregation. And that comic book also influenced him. So he thought it would be important to pass that on. LT told the story that he told of the guy who beat him up, who comes in later on and apologizes for it. And I think this also reflects John Lewis's philosophy for the nonviolent movement, which was he wanted to change people's hearts by loving his enemy. So no matter what these people did to him, he did not want to respond with violence in kind. He wanted to change their minds, and they realized that the way to change people's minds is to make them understand first that you're a human being. And so even though at different points he had the shit beat out of him, he had cigarettes put out on him, he would never react, and none of them would, because and they always tried to make eye contact with the people who were doing it and always be extremely polite. So that way, you know, later on, these hoodlums that were beating him up, hopefully they all got some sort of reflection like, man, I was an asshole, but probably not.
Yeah, that kind of growth thing would be kind of hard to hard metric to measure. I was just looking up Stokely Carmichael, who also paid a big part in this when it comes to the two directions that SNCC and STCC took. Stokely Carmichael was another civil rights activist, very powerful in his day, and not a radical, not someone who advocated violence, but he wasn't quite as much on board with the stoic, you know, just take it and sooner or later they'll have to respect us line. And because of that, that's how Stick and Snick kind of came at these crossroads and change. If we look at it now, it doesn't seem like such a huge diversion, but at the time it really was. Just using revolutionary rhetoric, which Stokely Carmichael was very apt to use, and John Lewis was too. He was actually very torn between going strictly with the nonviolence and going towards Stokely Carmichael, where there was, you know, resistance. So we see that in the book, I think.
Yeah, and you also see that he, in his autobiography, he talks about not March itself, but in his actual autobiography, he talks about the speech that he gave on the March on Washington. He was one of the 10 speakers. He went 6 right after Martin Luther King. So it was an easy thing to do, right?
And he was only 23 years old going right after.
Yeah, 23-year-old college student who was given a speech right after Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. So
That's a tough follow-up. So it's not surprising you don't remember his speech right after I Have a Dream.
Yeah.
It's a great speech. If you read the speech, it is a great, great speech. But – you know, you're holding a candle, you're holding a blowtorch against the sun.
Yeah. So he, in his original draft of the speech, said that he wanted to spread desegregation and march it across the South like Sherman's army. And Martin Luther King, and I can't remember who the other civil rights leader was, who read the speech the day before, were like, you got to tune it down. Because all you're going to do is give our opposition a sound bite where you're going to say we're going to march like Sherman through the South, and they're not going to play the rest of the stuff where you're going to be talking about nonviolence and spreading love. They're not going to hear any of that. So in the speech that he delivered, he takes that out. But in his autobiography, he talks about how he was really torn by that. Because he wanted to preach that fire and brimstone kind of sermon, but he took the advice of the other civil rights leaders.
Yeah, his speech was much more of a call to action.
Yes.
than a call to passively resist. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, but his philosophy pays off when you talk about heroes. He was part of the bus rides, the freedom rides, where they realized that there was so much segregation through the South, including on buses going through there, which was covered by federal law, that they were going to him and other people rode buses together. He got arrested 40-something times during that. And if it wasn't for the fact that he had a possible scholarship.
Fun Alex fact, the exact number of times that John Lewis was arrested was 45. Don't think I had that on the top of my head. I did look that up. And also, fun Alex fact, let's go around the room. How many times have we been arrested, guys? I've been arrested 4 times.
I've never been arrested.
0.
Counting.
Counting.
Twice about California. 6.
Oh, Josh, you got me, buddy. Two of my times were, like, immediately released civil disobedience during a riot.
I had a DUI in Mass.
Go over the bad ones, man.
I said all the bad. Oh, because they're all so good.
Yeah. Mine are all pretty good.
Mine are not all good.
I got arrested twice for civil disobedience at different protest rallies during Occupy. I got arrested once for having syringe needles on me when I was, you know, taking in and doing a syringe handout, and I got one driving bicycling under the influence.
I certainly protested getting arrested a lot, but I was never arrested at a protest.
Oh, and also I got the one for kidnapping in Germany. That was dropped. That was dropped. So, John Lewis, you have us beat at 45. Go on, yep. Mikey. Sorry.
So, during the Freedom Rides, they were... He might have lost his life during the Freedom Rides because they started bombing the buses. And if it wasn't for the fact that he had an interview and had to leave, he probably would have died on the buses. Which
there's like four times where fate intervened and John Lewis wasn't killed in a bus bombing or pulled off of a truck and beaten to death.
And then, of course,
horrible car accident.
Yeah. Oh, the horrible car accident. Yeah.
March 7th, 1965, Bloody Sunday. He and a group of protesters are going across the Edmund Pettus Bridge when they are met in force by Alabama State Police. John Lewis's skull was fractured. He almost died then, and that is... one of the things that actually led to the passing of the Civil Rights Act, because it's hard for people to ignore what was going on. Back in the 1960s, people who did not want to see it really didn't have to see it, but this was covered immensely on television, and it got to the point where people who just wanted to turn a blind eye and say, oh, that's the South's problem, suddenly saw peaceful protesters being beaten by police. And it became a call to action to say, no, this is not the way the United States of America is supposed to work.
It's almost like a free and unrestricted press helped the country change in a positive manner.
It's weird.
Who
right?
knew?
So that's strange.
Strange. So
only
strange.
That existed today.
So do we want to talk about how people reacted to Congressman Lewis's passing? Or do we want to talk more about his life?
I'd like to mention something mentioned of his passing, if you don't mind me taking an excerpt from a statement.
Sure.
So this is just a partial, though. It's a... through his principled adherence to the fundamental democratic values of liberty, equality, and justice, Congressman Lewis won admiration even among those who did not share his political outlook. In the course of many years of public service, he inspired many Americans to take up the cause of justice and peace through nonviolence. Although he is no more, his personal example remains to inspire Americans to make their country and the wider world a better place for everyone, and that is with my prayers from the Dalai Lama. So I just one of the things that always strikes me, especially in recent times as we sort of struggle what's going on, that there is a when people outside of this country speak of us, they start speaking to us with more specificity than in the past. So people used to talk about America as sort of the world police, or sort of this blanket of democracy and truth and hopefully honor. And now, in an understandable fashion, we are the objects of international advice. I feel like we're being preached to instead of spoken of. And it's not a difficult thing to see from outside our country, but it's nice to know that the world does see the good people who are still trying to do what needs to be done here and recognize them.
So to go along with that, President Obama wrote a nice, beautiful thing on John Lewis, and I'm just going to quote some of it because if you want to look it up, I'm sure you can find it. John Lewis believed that in all of us there exists a capacity for great courage, a longing to do what's right, a willingness to love all people, and to extend to them their God-given rights to dignity and respect. And because he saw the best in all of us, that he will continue, even in his passing, to serve as a beacon in that long journey towards a more perfect union. Not many of us get to live to see our own legacy play out in such a meaningful way. John Lewis did, and thanks to him, we now all have our marching orders to keep believing in the possibility of remaking this country we love until it lives up to its full promise.
Beautiful. And as a call to action, let's look at what's going forward right now. The Democratic Party is trying to push forth the Voting Rights Act in John Lewis's name, which will help extend the Voting Rights Act and make sure that every vote is counted, even in those counties where it's going to be difficult because of COVID this year, and especially in those counties where voter suppression has been such a big thing in the past, and it's, you know, just not under one president. It's been going on for a long time. The idea that if you don't have an ID, if you don't have a bank account, if you don't have this, if you don't have that, you can't vote, and even felons not being able to vote, has always suppressed the vote, especially among the African-American community. So getting this particular bill put through right now in his name, I think would be a terrific way to really help, you know, show that we didn't just listen to the man, we followed the man.
Unfortunately, I think LT could speak of this more. That bill has been sitting in the Senate for 228 days.
Refusing
to get brought up for a vote.
Have you gotten your postcards yet there, Tommy?
No, I need to do that.
I got my postcards. I've been writing. So those are not in the know, you can send away to the Democratic Party, and they will send you a mailing list of people in Kentucky you can actually send postcards to and ask them to tell Mitch McConnell to please free this bill up so that it can be voted on. You can also tell these nice people, maybe Mitch McConnell's not your best guy.
And for those who aren't very big history buffs, just a quick reminder, before the Voting Rights Act passed, it was up to the county commissioner to decide who was allowed to vote and who wasn't. And they could set arbitrary tests. For example, if you went in to register to vote, they could say, how many bubbles are on a bar of soap? And no matter what you said, if you were a minority, they'd be like, no, you're wrong. You can't vote. And that was just the way it was.
Yeah. And that's a very, you know, in your face way of doing it. But there were more insidious way of doing it too. Just the grandfather clause. Was your grandfather able to vote? No, then you can't vote. I mean, that grandfather clause, was just an in your face way of saying, oh, well, you come from slaves, so you're always a slave, so you're never going to be able to vote.
Right. And it also plays into poll tax, right? So yeah. depending on, you know, I'd like to register vote. Okay, that's going to be $20, you know, which is obviously illegal now, but back then that wasn't illegal. In 2013, the Supreme Court did the decision, which was horrible, called Shelby County versus Holder, where they ruled that the Voting Rights Act has not been renewed by Congress, and therefore they can't uphold it because it was supposed to be renewed, and there's no longer any reason for it, which is a total fallacy. And you can see that just in the incredibly long lines that the folks in Georgia just had to go through for their recent primary election. A 2018 study by the Brennan Center for Justice found that blacks and Hispanics wait 45% longer than whites to vote in the U.S. because they limit the number of polling places.
Hello, let's talk about that for a quick second. We're all white guys, right? Everybody white here?
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
So, all right. The last time I voted, I walked over to my place, 5-minute walk for me, over to a nice little Army base that happens to be our local National Guard place. And walked in the door, said hi to Nancy, who I've known for about a year and a half now because she goes to my bar, signed in with my wife. I signed us both in. We were in and out of there in about, with schmoozing, 14 minutes, 15 minutes tops, with schmoozing and saying hi to Nancy and asking where our kids were. Anyone else have anything longer than that?
Oh, mine was way shorter than that because I didn't do any schmoozing and I didn't know the person.
Oh, you didn't know Nancy? Nancy's a pimp. You should come down. So how long, Nancy?
Mine was probably like 7 minutes.
All right. Joshy?
Not even close to 7 minutes. My voting place was at an Italian-American club. I think there was no line. I walked in, I voted, I left every time I voted.
Well, it had to take at least five. Like, you have to sign in, say hi, go through the thing.
Yeah, that's about it.
Five, okay, five. Mikey?
The longest I've ever waited is when I first turned 18 and voted in my first election, and that was at Palmer High School, and that was a total of about 20 minutes. And that was only because it was right after school because my mom and dad were excited that I was going to be able to vote, and they asked me to wait so that we could all go together. And everybody, nice. It was the evening when everybody had gotten off of work.
That's kind of sweet. Oh, I like nice. That. Do you remember the first person you voted for, like you were excited to vote for?
No, I'd have to think about it. I can't remember.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
I don't remember the first person I voted for. I remember the first person I was excited to vote for, and that didn't work out.
Actually, I do know the first person I voted for.
What was that?
Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy, all right. The lion of the Senate. Josh, you remember?
He ran unopposed.
I think my first one was a primary, and I can't remember the guy's name. I think he was up against, like, Dukakis. He was one of the guys who was up against Dukakis.
Did he have a boat named Monkey Business? I remember that guy.
I can't remember the guy's name, though. All right. I'll think of it.
I don't think I've ever missed an opportunity to vote since. I've been pretty active when it comes to phone banking. Lainey and I phone banked in California maybe 30, 40, 50 hours. Probably closer to 40. We're always pretty active when it comes to working and trying to make sure, you know, we get the vote right. You guys do any of that?
No.
No? Okay. That's okay. LT, you can't. Yeah. LT, you're getting those postcards, right? You already sent away for yours.
I haven't because I keep
forgetting. Oh, you cocksucker. Come on. I sent away for mine. You sent away for yours. It's specifically a mailing list in Kentucky to get Mitch McConnell out. You better get your 20 because I got a hand cramps writing my 20.
You know who it was?
Who was that?
Paul Tsongas.
Oh, I love Paul Tsongas.
Yeah. I loved Paul Tsongas.
He fucking stopped running for president because he ran out of money. And when that happened, I was like, well, that's the guy I want fucking running for president.
President.
You guys don't have enough money? Keep going, man.
I thought Tsongas was great. Like, he was, I was like, wow, this is the first politician I ever, like, really wanted to vote for. Like, I had any real desire to vote for. Paul Tsongas, where are you now?
Here's something funny. I voted for mayor when I lived in Burlington, Vermont. I won't say a young, but a spry Bernie Sanders. And I met him on the corner of a Walmart and a Dunkin' Donuts holding a Vote Bernie Sanders sign. And I shook his hand, and he seemed so goddamn earnest. He was. He's like, I'm Bernie Sanders. I'm running for mayor. I'm like, great, Bernie. What's your party? He goes, I'm a socialist. And by the way, he was running as a socialist. And I'm like, really? Really?
Spoiler alert. Paul Tsongas died in 1997.
Oh, geez.
Disappointing. Yeah.
All right. Because
I think I saw it was like the 92. I think that was like the 92 DNC. So,
oof.
He didn't. Yeah. How old was he? He must have been pretty young.
He was in his 50s.
Hey, dude, was jumping a motorcycle over a bunch of cans?
Yeah,
water skiing over a shark? What'd he do, man?
He was 55.
Wow.
Yeah, what killed him? Come on, Mike.
I'm going to say Mitch McConnell.
Probably. Probably.
Probably.
Oh,
yeah. You'll never prove it, but probably.
He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and died of pneumonia.
That's a conspiracy theory. He actually survived crashing his limousine off of a cliff. And you know how he survived?
Sprinkler systems in the back.
Can you believe it?
Can you believe it?
For those of you playing at home waiting for the Hudson Hawks reference, go ahead and fill in your scorecard right now.
Airbags. Can you believe it?
I just want to read, let's get back on topic, just a couple of things from comic book writers who also had some things to say. Tom King said John Lewis was an American hero. He was also my neighbor here on the hill, and I'd run into him now and then just strolling. He'd play a little with my kids or dog. Him and my youngest would joke. Damn, he was just amazingly kind to everyone. And then the fifth member of the Long Box guys, Mark Russell, said, was proud to have met John Lewis on a couple of occasions. He was always and will be a reminder of what our nation could be if we valued people more than we feared them. Rest in peace.
Mark says it good.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy should become a writer.
Credit. Yeah, that guy should write something. I don't know what, but damn it.
Kids, all right, let's go with our last thoughts on the, once again, the conscious of the Congress, John Lewis. Is he going to lay in state? Do we even know that at this point?
I do not know. Yeah. Although, if you want to sign the petition that is going on, I recommend you do it. There's a petition going on to get the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where he almost died at the hands of the state trooper, renamed to the John Lewis Bridge. If you're not aware, Edmund Pettus was a former U.S. senator. He was a Confederate general and the former leader of the Ku Klux Klan. So they have already once tried to rename the bridge, and it was voted down by the Alabama State House. They voted not to change the name. So hopefully they will get off their ass and change it.
It seems like a good time to do so. Anyone else have any last words to say about John Lewis?
Yeah, I'd just like to say very few people get to at least realize even part of their dreams. And I think I was listening to a few interviews and in where he was talking about the election of Barack Obama and then on Barack Obama awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian award you can receive in this country. And during that speech, his sort of acceptance speech there, he had he just went with his oft-repeated mantra, which was brave, bold, and courageous. And it would be nice if more people who had a vested interest and a position of power in our government took that to heart and picked up the flag and carried it forward.
Amen, brother.
And I will say there was one politician who once tweeted that John Lewis was, quote, all talk, talk, no action or results, sad. And to that politician, I say, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, Trump. Fuck you. Tell me in less words.
And now in heaven, there will be somebody to tend the chickens because John Lewis will probably happily do so.
As he probably will.
Give his sermons to the chickens each day.
That makes a lot more sense if you read volume one, but it really does. John did love his chickens growing up.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
All right, let's go over to the front of the Long Box. Mike, what do you got over there, buddy?
At the front of the Long Box, I have a book called The Silence of Our Friends. It is by the artist Nate Powell, is also the artist for this book. If those of you aren't aware, it is a quote. The title is a quote from Martin Luther King, which is, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. I thought this would be appropriate because it involves an event that occurred in Houston, Texas, more than 50 years ago. It's called the TCU Riot. Back in May of 1967, there was the newspapers reported that there was a riot at Texas State University. Police officers responded, and it resulted in thousands of shots fired, the arrests of nearly 500 students, traumatic injuries on both sides, and the tragic death of a rookie police officer named Louis Cuba. What was left out of the press coverage was that the students weren't actually rioting. There were no reports of looting, destruction of property, or resistance of arrests, all essential hallmarks of a riot. This was a protest, a civil rights protest, and as a police car was driving by, somebody threw debris at the police car. And this was followed by an invasion of the police onto campus, followed by an isolating shooting of the police officer, which then escalated into an Alamo-scale shootout, all of which, while complex, was not a riot. There was five people arrested, the TCU Five. They were charged with conspiracy and incitement to riot. However, they were exonerated due to insufficient evidence. And of note, Officer Cuba was shot and killed with a .30 caliber bullet, which was not only incompatible with the confiscated guns from the dormitory, but the ballistics and coroner report confirmed that it was ricochet fire from the Houston police that killed their own officer. This is a book about that incident. Very, very well done. I recommend, if you're interested in civil rights, in addition to buying all three copies of March, you go check out The Silence of Our Friends.
Sounds like a great one. I'm going to buy it tonight. Tommy, what are you at the old front?
I have Salvagers, volume 1 and 2. And unfortunately, I can't find any more of it, but it seems like a story that isn't done. It's a sci-fi story about a group of people that are hired to basically salvage wrecks. And they're told that they're going to go salvage this warship and that they need to bring back all these munitions. But when they get there, the whole ship has been cleaned out, and in its place are a bunch of robot mercenaries that are powered by the ship itself. They kind of absorb power from local power sources. And so they have to basically fight off these robots and take whatever they can from the ship to kind of scrap the mission. And they find a war tank that was left by the mercenaries, and it goes on from there. And it ends up there's a biological weapon there. And it just, like I said, it seems like the story's not quite done, but Sublime was released a year ago, and I haven't seen anything else on Comixology for it yet. But it was compelling enough for me to, after reading the first volume, to buy the second one and read that last night. So I'm hoping Volume 3 is coming out soon.
Was that an Image comic?
It is published by Source Point Press, so it's a small publisher. It's done by Bob Sally, Chris Genovois, Fariza Kempeputra, HDE. So,
I was just wondering if it was published by Dynamite Comics. Did you guys hear about the controversy with Dynamite this week?
No,
I did not.
Just a little bit. I didn't get too deep into it. Why don't you fill us in there, Mike?
So the publishers at Dynamite decided to team up with Comicsgate to promote their Indiegogo title and give them a variant cover, all of which resulted in a massive backlash from others in the comic book industry. I don't want to give Comicsgate too much airtime because it's just a group of alt-right trolls who take pleasure in mocking people that are not white and straight.
Or healthy.
And it has resulted in a number of comic book artists and writers, including friend of the podcast, the Fifth Long Box guy, Mark Russell, saying, "I'm done. Even though I was writing Red Sonja, I just finished the last issue. I'm not working with you anymore." Dynamite came back and was like, "We did not know that people would have this kind of reaction." Like, really? You didn't realize? And so Dynamite, to their credit, is like, "Sorry, we're not going through with these plans after all." But it shouldn't take a bunch of backlash for you to know not to, you know, partner up with assholes.
Yeah. Hey, jumping. It's not lying in bed with dogs, getting up with fleas. It's lying in bed with Nazis. It's different.
The dogs can't help having fleas.
Yeah, the dogs have fleas. It's fine. But the Nazis are actually Nazis.
And that's a shame. That's a shame because Dynamite produced a lot of really great books.
They do, and they will continue to produce a lot of really great books. I hope they will learn from this mistake. I don't even know what drove them that way in the first place. It's not like Comics 8 has anything to offer.
There is a market for it. I mean, there are assholes out there who want this kind of comic.
Yeah. If you want to print Trump t-shirts, you're going to sell some.
Yeah.
You know, there's like 29 to 38% of America really wants to wear a Trump t-shirt. It's great. Oh. That's a lot of people.
Oh, if he wins, the super PAC we're going to make, it's going to give us the time to do what we need to do here. It's going to be awesome.
Even if he doesn't win, that super PAC is going to give us a lot of money.
Money.
I'd like to take a couple seconds to do my social rights corner, as I sometimes do, and talk about theactionnetwork.org. We've talked to that a little bit when I talked to LT, teasing him. Theactionnetwork.org is a movement that tries to put action into actual movement. The one I'm going to talk about today is actionnetwork.org, Ditch Mitch McConnell. And we've talked about that a little bit, but if you go to actionnetwork.org/forum/women-ditch-mitch-postcards, you can get yourself 20 postcards, just 20 postcards and a mailing list to 20 women in Kentucky that you could write a postcard to and say something like, "Hey, Marge, I see that you live in blank. I live in Boston. I know we don't have a lot in common, but I think we both like our children, and I think we're both worried about coronavirus. I think we're probably both worried about the economy and the environment. And I don't think Mitch McConnell has your best interest in mind. And maybe vote for someone else. Thanks, Tom from Boston." That's all you got to write. Do that 20 times to 20 different people named Marge. Once again, I'm going to say that again, nice and slow. Go to actionnetwork.org/forum/women-ditch-mitch-postcards, and you're there. Or just Action Network Ditch Mitch, and you'll find it in a Google search. It's a great way to put your money where your mouth is. You got to buy the stamps. That's 20 cents on you, buddy. But do it. I'm sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent. Josh, that's usually your purview. Got a tangent for me, buddy?
I do. It's an odd one. So in my office,
something odd.
In my office, very often the thing that's running is whatever financial news of the day, right? And it, you know, it's just stock prices and blah 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 and financial information, and generally something I'm not particularly interested in, especially because I can't invest anything as I'm a FINRA employee, so I can't really. I personally can't invest in anything, so why we actually have that stuff up there, who knows? Anyway, so I have noticed recently there have been some pretty big ad spots. Like, this is not cheap ad space, right? Like, it's like UBS and Fidelity, like, advertising there. It's not like Burger King or Wendy's is even bothering to throw up an advertisement here. This is money-heavy space. And you know who has been advertising? Nightscope, a company called – Nightscope. Night with a K. Like, and what they make are law enforcement robots. So,
wow, that is better than I thought. It was just like Knight's mouthwash. So this is much more interesting.
All right, wait. I thought Nightscope would be one of those really, really powerful flashlights. LT, what did you think Nightscope was?
Oh, I thought it was going to be a sniper rifle scope.
Okay. All right. Everyone had the wrong thing.
So, yeah. K-N-I-G. Oh, it comes right up. Yeah, scope. Yeah.
It comes right up on Google search, guys.
Oh, it does. Yeah. These guys, I don't know where they got their funding, but they have started a serious advertising campaign, like a serious national advertising campaign. And so I looked at like some of their, you know, robots, and they're basically, you know, 6 foot high dildos rolling around with cameras and sensors.
Oh no, these are Daleks. Exterminate. Exterminate.
And so I was just like, huh. And somebody had mentioned that their grocery store has a robot that patrols the aisles for like spilled items.
We have one, yes.
Why?
There's one at Stop and Shop that just kind of continuously mops. It just roams continuously mopping.
I get the Roomba thing.
It's like a Roomba.
But yeah, so I don't really know a lot about these guys. But then I started digging in and sort of seeing like they have a lot of like AI chops. Like they have been like dancing with like data and metrics for a long time if you get through their investors and start peeling away the layers. And so I want to take everybody's temperature about robot police. How do we feel about robot police?
It kind of looks like a butt plug without the flared base.
Yeah.
All I know is I got 17 hours and 11 minutes and 48 seconds left to invest.
That's all you got. All you got, Mike.
So let me talk about my Stop and Shop. Stop and Shop had a protest against these robots. And that went on about 5-6 weeks ago. And then they stopped. It was kind of in the middle of COVID. And they got a new contract.
They were interested in protesting. Very interested in protesting. Really interested in protesting. And they're not so interested in protesting.
So what they did was they put big googly eyes on their robot.
Oh.
And now his name is Fred. And I will defend Fred with my fucking life. I love Fred. I didn't like the thing that was just walking up and down the aisles beeping at me. But that was Fred.
That's Fred.
But here's the reason for it, LT. Here's the reason for it. I've worked in retail. I've worked in stores. And I have seen employees walk past a puddle of soda on the floor a dozen times and not give a fuck about it. They don't put down a sign. They don't put down a call for it. They don't clean it up. But if you tell a robot, hey, go up and down the aisles. If you see a spill, stop and beep until someone comes. You know what they'll do? They'll stop at that fucking puddle and they'll beep until that fucking puddle goes away. Because that's all they can do. Robots in that way are better than employees sometimes. Because sometimes I'm doing like 19 things and I honestly just don't have time to stop and clean up a puddle. Even though someone could break their neck on it. That's why the robot is there, LT. I mean, it's as a guy who's actually had to.
I have no problem with the robot being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sound like you did also.
I want to invest the $200, but I feel this is how we get Skynet.
Is this how we get Skynet? Because I don't want Skynet.
Really? So I'm conflicted.
You don't want Skynet?
I mean, I respect and love our robot overlords. Don't get me wrong.
Wait. Are you giving me an either or on Skynet, current president or Skynet? Because if you give me an either or, it gets tougher.
It's tough.
I can shoot guns at Terminators.
I mean, Skynet really doesn't care what skin color you have. He hates all humans.
I mean, they are projecting a profit of $250,000 per robot. I'm thinking of investing.
Egalitarian.
I mean, I either invest in this robot company or I buy Tom two armies of Warhammers.
It's like throwing your money at the fucking it clown. Either way,
say it.
Well, his name is Pennywise. he sounds like he's a fiduciary.
Right. here's the thing I don't understand. How are these robots going to pull up in a van and disappear people? I don't understand it.
Oh, have you seen the Boston Robotics ones? You know, they got
terrifying. These don't look like they could just, you know, like disappear people easily.
Well, one of them looks like a car, so it could just run them over.
Right. Then it would need to team up with Fred, because Fred would have to come and clean up the mess.
That's fine. That's what Fred's for.
Do you want a T-900? Because that's how you get a T-900.
That's how you get T-900.
They are asking for my Social Security number, but seeing the Chinese already have it, I don't feel bad about giving it to them.
Yeah.
And they're robots. They probably already have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
They've done their data research. It's not like they don't have your social, so whatever.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? I locked
into no cybersecurity in the back.
It is a cool-looking car.
It is.
I'll give it that.
Dude, I want that car as my friend. That's like your like robotic kit, right? Like following you around and kicking ass. I'm all fucking about that. Yeah. The K7 multi-terrain ASR. Yeah, bitches. Give me one of those.
Jay Leno has three.
You know, the only problem that I see is that, like, it just seems like, from an investor point, Mike, it seems like it would be terribly open to liability lawsuits.
Oh, what do you mean? My butt plug killed three people? Who cares?
No, it won't be open to liability lawsuits. Don't be ridiculous. It'll be mostly held by counties and cities who will take... who will apply the same laws they apply now to police officers. So there's no liability. That's ridiculous. Dear
I'm
robots.
Just throwing that out there, Mike. Just throwing that out there.
I
appreciate that. However, this is my next Kickstarter. I mean, I've already bought four games that I'll probably never see. Because they're all good. By the way, when Dark Tower arrives at your place, LT, don't be surprised.
So, Mike, what you're saying is you're expecting them to come out with a model that can kick people, because this is going to be your Kickstarter.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. All right. That tracks.
I mean, yeah, they're spending some big money on advertisements, so they're not slow rolling out of whatever they're doing. They are they're beating down the doors.
They got my money. Shut up and take my money. All right. I guess that'll do it for us. We've already plugged one thing. That's robots that will kill people. Anyone have anything better to plug?
Well, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com.
Will they kill people?
I don't know. I've never broached the subject with them, but...
They don't sound like they'll kill people, so they have my money. LT, anything to plug?
I'd like to plug geekorthodox.com.
Geekorthodox.com.
Hello, Tammy.
Three of the nicest feet you'll ever see.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyors of fine t-shirts and other geeky things such as stained glass prints, Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, socks, baseball caps, you name it, they got it. Head over to GeekOrthodox.com for all your geeky stuff.
I'm plugging ActionNetwork.org one more time. ActionNetwork.org. Go over there, find out how you can actually take some of your anger and put it into action. ActionNetwork.org. And that'll do it for us this week, guys. Hope we had a good week. Hope everyone had fun listening to us. Hope we took your mind off everything.
Before we go, we should also let everybody know, if you haven't already gone to patreon.com/longboxguys, you are missing out on an extra podcast every week by us.
Wait, every week?
Every week or so. By us, where we talk about all the geeky things besides comic books, and all of the donations are going to the Elizabeth Peabody House Food Bank. So we appreciate everybody on Patreon who donates to us, and just know that all your money is going to help feed hungry people. And I'm gonna be a spoiler next week. If you're interested, you want to tune in if you are a fan of New Kids on the Block. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh. I have no idea if that's the right song. The right song.
Sure, why not?
We'll never know.
Probably not. We're going to have a special guest next week. My wife is going to tell us who the New Kids are. So if you guys Which one's the bad boy? Which one's the good boy? Which one's the introvert? Which one is the hot one?
Wait, is Joey Fatone one of the new kids on the block?
Did I say that one? Joey Fatone is not one of the new kids on the block.
No, he's something else.
No, he's
one of the NSYNC people, isn't he? Is that it?
Who knows?
NSYNC? Good on you, boy.
Is this going to be like a Bill Pullman and that other guy?
Bill Pullman and the other guy.
The other guy that everyone always thinks is Bill Pullman. Bill Pritchard? Potcher Drain. LT, any last words for us, buddy?
Stop buying stuff from Kentucky until they ditch Mitch.
Ditch Mitch.
Yeah.
Josh, North Carolina your sector, buddy?
Oh, yeah. I dug Asheville, so North Carolina's definitely my sector.
And Mike, what do you always say, buddy?
This podcast is like Drunk History, but for comics. And Tom, what do you always say?
You know what I always say? Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live longer. Thank you so much from the Long Box, guys.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Go get in some good trouble.
Oh, good ad.
Would have been great if Tom wasn't coughing over that ad.
Sorry.
Go get in some good trouble.
Oh, Tom was talking over you again.
Go get in some good trouble.
It would have come out better if you weren't moving like this while you were talking, so I didn't get the Doppler effect.
Go get in some good trouble.
Nope, it still came up broken up.
Go get in some good trouble.
What is wrong with your mic? Why does it come and go?
Back the fuck up. That's not happening. No, your mic is not designed to be chugged like a cock. Just
go get in some good trouble.
Mike, go get in some good trouble.